Well, good evening. I'm back again for longer. Unpacked my bag and thought, I'm not going to do this for a long time now. Everyone sends their greetings in Arcata. Several are planning to come down in August to join us. So that will be nice. We talked, I talked for 3 evenings about the Tenzo Kyokun. And then there were 3 evenings of Dharma talks for the Sesshin, and I talked about it again. So I've got it in me somewhat. And I'm looking forward to our study group. It's going to be very, very interesting. There's a lot of good stuff in there, really fine stuff. It's Dharma in the kitchen. So it's extremely practical. The whole first part of it is the most practical, about pots and pans and the messy business of food. But all the way through, it has many, many levels. And here, last time you did with Donalyn, believing in nothing, is that it? So, tonight we're on attachment, non-attachment. Oh, you did attachment, non-attachment. So the believing one hasn't been done yet? Or did we do that already?
I think we did do believing in nothing.
The last one I remember is one that was about maybe we did. Well, that gets us to calmness. Perfect. It's a short one, but it's a good one. You want to begin?
Page 121, calmness. For Zen students, a weed is a treasure. A Zen poem says, after the wind stops, I see a flower falling. Because of the singing bird, I found the mountain calmness. Before something happens in the realm of calmness, we do not feel the calmness. Only when something happens within it do we find the calmness. There's a Japanese saying, for the moon there's the cloud, for the flower there's the wind. When we see a part of the moon covered by a cloud, or a tree, or a weed, we feel how round the moon is. But when we see the clear moon without anything covering it, we do not feel that roundness the same way we do when we see it through something else.
When you were doing Zazen, you were within the complete calmness of your mind. You did not feel anything, you just sit. But the calmness of your sitting will encourage you in your everyday life, so actually you will find the value of Zen in your everyday life, rather than while you sit. But this does not mean that you should neglect Zazen. Even though you do not feel anything when you sit, if you do not have this Zazen experience, you cannot find anything. You just find weeds or trees or clouds in your daily life. You do not see the moon. That is why you are always complaining about something. But for the Zen students, a weed, which for most people is worthless, is a treasure. With this attitude, whatever you do, life becomes an art.
Thank you.
When you practice Zazen, you should not try to attain anything. You should just sit in the complete calmness of your mind and not rely on anything. Just keep your body straight without leaning over or against something. To keep your body straight means to not to rely on anything. In this way, physically and mentally, you will obtain complete calmness. But to rely on something or to try to do something in Zazen is dualistic and not complete calmness.
In our everyday life, we're usually trying to do something, trying to change something into something else, or trying to attain something. Just this try is already in itself an expression of our true nature. The meaning lies in the effort itself. We should find out the meaning of our effort before we attain something. So Dogen said, we should attain enlightenment before we attain enlightenment. It is not after attaining enlightenment that we find its true meaning. But trying to do something in itself is enlightenment. When we are in difficulty or distress, there we have enlightenment. When we are in defilement, there we should have composure. Usually, we find it very difficult to live in the evanescence of life, but it is only within the evanescence of life that we can find the joy of eternal life.
By continuing your practice with this sort of understanding, you can improve yourself. But if you try to attain something without this understanding, you cannot work on it properly. You lose yourself in the struggle for your goal. You achieve nothing. You just continue to suffer in your difficulties. But with right understanding, you can make some progress. Then whatever you do, even though not perfect, will be based on your inmost nature, and little by little, something will be achieved.
Which is more important, to attain enlightenment or to attain enlightenment before you attain enlightenment? To make $1,000,000 or to enjoy your life in your effort, little by little, even though it is impossible to make that million? To be successful or to find some meaning in your effort to be successful? If you do not know the answer, you will not even be able to practice Zazen. If you do know, you will have found the true treasure of life.
When I hear these words and read these words, what I feel is a bunch of young, very ambitious Zen students practicing with Suzuki Roshi and being very gung-ho. I remember those years. And at Zen Center, for all the time that I knew it until Blanche came in, the whole attitude was the way he's describing it here, being trying to get enlightened and trying to live the Zen life. And it meant that everybody was wearing black robes and everybody was carrying themselves like this. And with the eyes down, nobody would meet anybody's eyes, not during the sesshin, but just everyday ordinary if you walked into the center. It felt always to me like a refrigerator. I always shivered when I came out of there because it was so austere. And I think in some of the talks that he's giving were given in Los Altos at Haiku Zendo, but I think he must have met some of that kind of ambitious practice at Los Altos also, and is trying to address the impossibility of making that kind of effort, and to describe it as enlightenment before enlightenment is very puzzling and kind of helpful, kind of interesting and helpful. There's one sentence in here which I think is really scrambled, and it's one that Russ read. Even though you do not feel anything when you sit, if you do not have this Zazen experience, and then there's an extra phrase in there that I marked out. If you do not have this zazen experience, you just find weeds or trees or clouds in your daily life. You do not see the moon. It's that mind of everything being a thing. Everything just one more thing getting away in the way of everything else. All the stuff we have to bump into and deal with, and without being in touch, what he calls the moon, which is zazen, without the mind of zazen, then nothing has meaning or even feeling often. There's that feeling of alienation. There's just all this stuff. And then there's me, sort of in the middle of it, weedy meadow, or in the mall, or downtown somewhere. But at the same time, we aren't. The effort we make isn't to achieve some kind of special mind, that zazen mind that is the moon, and changes the world for us and makes us special. So he's pointing to a paradox that I think isn't very well expressed about no attainment. There's the attainment of no attainment also. And it's also the non-attainment of attainment. However you go about it, you have to give it up. Whatever you want to think about it will fall away. So we say sometimes no attaching to outcome. And that, I think, is probably the best advice. It isn't that we don't have some kind of intention. It's important to have intention. But to become very attached to it is kind of dooms us to disappointment. Even if we achieve the $1 million that he's talking about, then we're not living the $1 million, you could say. We're living the desire, living the goal. And as we know now in psychology, people who actually are ambitious in that way are never satisfied. Almost always, ones who strive for great success and achieve it are endlessly striving. Just read about a man who had infinite amount of money and was extremely successful, and everyone respected and admired him, and he started breaking the law so he could get more, and there was no reason for it. His friends were appalled when they found out what he was doing, but he couldn't quite help himself because that was his drive. As Zen students, I don't think most of us have that kind of drive. I think this is addressed to those who misunderstand, who actually think weeds are weedy. His point is we experience what we meet, whether it's weeds or trees or our best beloved, with the same very open wide, accepting mind, being willing to meet and see what's before us, willing to experience it fully, to be it, even if it's someone who is a real pain in the neck. There's a big question about how we find joy in our life. And that's what he's talking about in here also. That's something that Dogen was talking about in the Tenzo Kyokun. Joy is one of the sort of basic aspects that he was encouraging. The more entangled we are with ourself, with our own issues and our own central role, our understanding of ourself as the most important thing, the harder it is to understand where joy lies. I'd say that joy is the support of Zazen, or the fruit of Zazen, or I don't know exactly how to place it. But it's a joy that is born and reborn in us as we drop our self-concerns. What he's saying about calmness isn't the calmness that we imagine when we first start to sit, that the mind is completely quiet. Quiet and calm aren't the same thing. A calm mind can hold anything, everything, and still be stirred up. As we sit for longer periods, our mind just naturally calms down. They always say it's like muddy water. It just, if it's not stirred up, it just settles. And that's certainly true. That's true for everybody. We're just kind of a bunch of nerves in a way. You know? And the way we think is just the way we notice our nervous system. It's all just buzzing around. But as we calm down, then the natural situation of things becomes obvious. And the best is to be able to have a stable and solid is a funny word. You don't really, it's hard to have a solid practice because everything just melts and flows from day to day. But a practice that's truly dedicated, so that whether we're sitting or we're standing and walking around, wherever we are, we're meeting the whole thing with the mind of Zazen. Or better, that we keep returning to it over and over, the way we return to the mind of our present moment, when we sit, that mind we carry with us, driving the car, teaching our kids, to come back to the feel and the smell and the taste of everything, just as we are. That's the calm mind he's talking about. Nothing special, but that's the enlightenment before enlightenment. Nothing is real except the moment that we're in. Everything is born out of this moment, not some other one that we would like better. There is happiness in difficulty, difficulty in happiness. Oh, that's the other one. Well, that's still true. So that's what came to me. Says, only within the evanescence of life can we find the joy of eternal life. That's maybe the essential paradox. Hard to explain, but experienceable. Other questions? Discussion, I hope. Dan?
It seems very difficult for me to separate, well, not separate, but join with the practice in my daily life in the sense of the following. If I create a list of things to do today, and you know there are five things on the list and two of them don't even get done, one of them is like, yeah, okay, that one came out okay, and the other ones are like nowhere near what I thought would happen. They're like so colossally blown bad that I'm extremely disappointed. Like, things that don't seem to be difficult at all are completely, don't turn out that way at all. And it's so easy to look at the list at the end of the day and say, man, no way, this is like bad. If this happens again tomorrow, how frustrating is that? And I will definitely not be calm around that the way that unfolded. I'm disappointed in how I was with it. I'm disappointed in the result. And I know the next day is the next opportunity. And in that sense, there's potential for freshness. But I think I'm kind of, the plan of these things to do is almost like a recipe for failure in the practice. And I'm wondering, is there a delusion there? Or am I not seeing the enlightenment in that way?
Well, if you accept that that's the way it comes out, then you can just enjoy it.
But I don't.
Well, that's... But you have a choice there. You know, you're just adding expectation on top of what's happening. And as long as you aren't wedded to it, then you can just smile when it doesn't come out the way you wanted it to. But if you're so wedded to it that you can't accept the way life is, and put yourself so in the center that it seems to be somebody's fault, that someone you think you are is taking the blame for it.
Actually, today's particular example of the one that got completely blown out of the water was so convoluted that you really couldn't point, you couldn't say, oh, it's their fault or it's my fault. It was just how messed up it is totally. Now, I think I could have handled it better, maybe. I definitely think this person I was talking to could have shown more ingenuity to help me. But it just went so kaflooey, so outrageously different than I could have ever thought, that there's like an element of, and the reason why I'm not calm about it is there's an element of uncontrollability.
Oh, yes.
That is frustrating to experience, at least for me.
Yes. And it will be as long as you're ambitious for yourself, or something that seems... And it's interesting to address that, to see what it is that's at risk, why it's not possible to let it go and be the way it is. Study the self.
So I'm back at work full time, and last week I was looking at job. This week I still do, and remaining calm with my boss is just really rocking my world. So I mean, today, I don't know, I mean, in Zazen just now, thank you, God, for Zazen. I guess that this piece about not relying on anything, and what came to me is relying on my boss's good opinion of me, to the point where I can be so unseated by apparently her not having a good opinion of me, which I know is not true. She does have a good opinion of me, but there's this thing. So maybe in other people's cases, ambition for themselves, and so I'm listening intently to what you're telling us tonight, and for me, it's even, you know, what does my teacher think of me? You know, that's what my little compass needle goes toward, is who am I setting up there that's going to make me okay? You know, my post that I compare myself, I position myself to. And I can see that is, doesn't work.
It's a problem.
It's a real problem.
Yeah. Yeah. And we all do it. We're always looking to see, well, how do they think about me? You know, the teacher does that too. What do the students think? That's even harder. And yet, you're absolutely right, and that's what he's saying, that each of us is a standalone process, as well as somewhere else in there he talks about how we're... about one, and we're part of the one of everything, and we're also singular and ourself, and how to enact this singularity of ourself in terms of how we're connected to everything is really the practice and the puzzle, the problem for us, whether it's you and your boss, or me and my son, or, you know, each one of us has many, many different ways of encountering the world and puzzling our way through the meaning of it. So it's, we say in Zen, we find our seat. Yes, we each have to find our own seat and speak from there, in spite of what other people are thinking about us. And it doesn't mean we respond in anger. It doesn't mean that we are defensive, self-defensive, but just that we have the courage to speak our truth, which may not be this, agreeable to what it is that we're meeting. But it means at the same time that we're able to be present to what's confronting us and take it all in. And in a new situation, you don't have all the information. I mean, even a little much of the information. You never have all the information. It's all very new, and it, she's feeling new too. So you're both in that kind of funny animal nature kind of business of trying to feel each other out. Yeah. Yeah, and jockeying for position in some way. Yes. Yes. We're funny animals that way. Yeah. Yeah, and she probably has her hands full with you, and you have your hands full with her. So it's a very interesting situation and could be extremely fun as well as hard work. Once you have some kind of understanding. And it takes a while to work out an understanding without...
Excuse me, I'm feeling like I'm saying a lot, but I guess my other question is this one of Avalokiteshvara? No. I mean, I need help. And is Avalokiteshvara going to help me?
We can all take the bus
and take care of it for you. Yeah. This is where she is. We can
help.
We're with you, Jane.
Oh, you just reminded me.
Yes. Yes.
Aren't we also okay feeling that we need help?
Absolutely, we do need help.
Even when we're like this, it's hard to remember that we're okay, but that's, isn't it a part of it?
Yes.
For us to be perfect, and we wouldn't like you anymore.
Of course we have hard times, and we need all the help we can get. And everything is Avalokiteshvara to us. You know, I always say my cushion is Avalokiteshvara, and my next door neighbor, and the dog up the street, and you know, the difficulties that come to us too, that buck us up and make us sit up straighter and find our seat often when we have lost it. The difficulties are part of it as well. So it's a matter of being willing to be present to whatever it is, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, on the top shelf or down at the bottom where it's just some cheap piece of junk, right?
You get a prize.
Yeah, but you always get a prize. Avalokiteshvara, hearer of the cries of the world. And we ourselves are Avalokiteshvara as well. Often unconsciously, we just simply reach out when we need to. Oh, it's after 8, I'm sorry. So nice to be back. Hard to stop. We do a 1-minute sit.